Right now, when we, at least I think about Krishna and see this world in front of me, the world with the trees and the grass and the rain and the sky, or when we're in Melbourne with the buildings and the traffic and the roads and one very shallow river going through the city. That appears to me very real, and Krishna seems less real, distant, far away, and in many ways unapproachable. But Srila Prabhupada's vision was quite different from this. It was clear from how he acted and also how he spoke and the potency of his words that for Prabhupada, Krishna was real, completely real, completely tangible, completely present. And this world was distant and illusory. And his vision, therefore, was quite different from our vision. And because Prabhupada actually saw Krishna real, so he also had a great urgency because of this in preaching, in spreading Krishna consciousness. He could see Krishna. He could see that, compassionately could see that the living entities, the souls, conditioned souls in this world were covered and weren't able to see Krishna, even though our constitutional position is to be with Krishna. This was his vision. And he saw that we were captured by illusion, by Maya, and that Krishna at best seems far away, often not even existent in our consciousness. This is illusion. This is Maya. Practically, this is the definition of Maya. Is not. Maya gives us the sense, an illusory sense of reality. And because Krishna is the absolute truth, nothing can in fact be separate from him. But we see this world by the potency of Maya as separate from Krishna. And the world again seems so real, and Krishna seems so far away. So Prabhupada saw the great necessity of preaching because he saw that we were neglecting our relationship with Krishna. And this was a disaster for the conditioned soul, because now we're in a situation which appears to be real to us, and Krishna seems far away, but because it's illusion, this so-called real situation is going to fade and change, and it's going to be destroyed at some point. What I mean is, our bodies, our concept of who we are, all these illusory concepts, beginning with our understanding of ourselves as our body, this is me, it's all going to be crushed in time because we think this is reality, because we're captivated by illusion. So Prabhupada seeing Krishna and Prabhupada seeing our condition, having taken shelter of the temporary, the always shifting and changing, as if it was reality, he saw we were in a dangerous condition because this engagement, materialistic, mayic engagement, finishes our human life and then thrusts back down into the world, to the land of samsara, next birth, Nagatirgatopi, who knows even what the next birth is. it could actually be a dog, a cat. Such suffering, such sadness. Such sadness because if we accept Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavi Hastini, who knows the rest? Supakecha, a pandit sees the soul. And his vision naturally causes compassion within him because he sees the capacity of the soul trapped and covered by this material body and material mind. So out of compassion, Prabhupada saw this and he wanted to preach and he lived his preaching. He lived it. He breathed it. That was his life. And he wanted to therefore spread the Krishna consciousness movement because he saw the essence of the Krishna consciousness movement, of course, was bhakti. And that bhakti was the process that would remove the illusion and establish us again in our relationship with Krishna, so that we would be established in reality. Because we have a relationship with Krishna and we have forgotten it. Bhule se jeev, turning our back on Krishna. We have forgotten him. Bhakti is the process of going from the back to the front, facing Krishna again. So that becomes the reality. Of course, it is the reality. So, Prabhupada was preaching always. And the excerpt of that we're going to hear of Prabhupada's words is that there's a lecture that he gave in Mayapur in 1976. And by Krishna's grace, I was there at that time. And in this lecture, Prabhupada, he was speaking about Prahlad Maharaj and the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj after Lord Nisringadev killed who? Yes, very good. And one of the prayers that Prahlad said, he was speaking to Lord Nisringadev. He was empowered to speak to Lord Nisringadev. And he said, "My dear Lord, O infallible one, you are perfect." Infallible means there is no fault in anything you do. You've ripped apart my father in a very bloody way. Can you imagine? He took the intestines of Aranyakashipu and placed it around his neck like a garland. That's extreme, isn't it? But he's infallible, and it's perfect. So he said, Prahlad said, "My position is like that of a person who has many wives, all trying to attract him in their own way. For example," this is the verse that Prahlad says, "the tongue is attracted to palatable dishes, so the tongue immediately wants gratification. The genitals to sex with an attractive woman, and the sense of touch to contact with soft things. The belly, although filled, still wants to eat more. And the ear, not attempting to hear about you, is attracted to cinema songs." So the prophet said. That's not a literal translation of what Prahlad said. Bollywood cinema songs, perhaps. So all the senses are being pulled in different directions. The sense of smell is attracted to yet another side. The restless eyes are attracted to scenes of sense gratification. And the active senses are attracted everywhere. Now this is the situation of the materialistic mind. It's grasping in so many different directions all at once. And the Prahlad's prayer concludes in this one. "In this way, I am certainly embarrassed." Now, Prabhupada's purport again speaks from the point of view of an eternal soul who has a relationship with Krishna. He says, this is from Prabhupada's purport to this book, to this verse, the human form of life is meant for God realization. But this process, which begins with Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, hearing and chanting the holy names of the Lord, is disturbed as long as our senses are materially attracted. Therefore, devotional service means purifying the senses. Purifying means removing that which is impure, noxious. Purifying means cleansing. So the tendency within the mind to use the senses in selfish ways, in illusory ways, and not in the service of Krishna needs to be purified. The mind needs to be purified. That's the point here. And devotional service means purifying the senses. In the conditioned state, that means while we are thinking and ourselves, the body, etc., our senses are covered by material sense gratification. This desire is so strongly pulling on us to enjoy, to enjoy, to enjoy. And as long as one is not trained in purifying the senses, removing this desire for the senses each to enjoy and embarrassing us by pulling us in different ways, unless we purify the senses, we cannot become a devotee, Prabhupada says. Obviously, because we can't serve two masters at the same time. We cannot serve our senses and Krishna. The needs are opposite, opposing to each other. So Prabhupada then says, in our Krishna consciousness movement, therefore, we advise from the very beginning that one restrict the activities of the senses, especially the tongue, which is described by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur as most greedy and unconquerable. To stop this attraction of the tongue, one is authoritatively advised not to accept meat or similar uneatable things, nor to allow the tongue to hanker to drink or to smoke. Even the drinking of tea and coffee is not permitted. Similarly, the genitals must be restricted from illicit sex. Without restriction of the senses, one cannot make any advancement in Krishna consciousness. Then Prabhupada says, the only method of controlling the senses is to chant and hear the holy name of the Lord. Seto dharpana majanam, the senses, the mind is purified. Otherwise, one will always be disturbed if the senses are pulling the mind in 50 different directions all at the same time. Our minds are going to be disturbed. How will it be possible to focus on serving Krishna? Otherwise, one will always be disturbed. As a householder with more than one wife will be disturbed by them for sense gratification. So in the lecture, Prabhupada, at one point he talks about, just imagine if a man had 8 or 10 wives and he comes home and each wife says, he didn't spend time with me last night. I will capture him. That's what Prabhupada said, something like that. So when he walks in, once one wife pulls his arm, and the other one pulls his ear, and the other one pulls his hair, and the other one pulls his leg, and the other one pulls his nose. They're all trying to pull him into their rooms. So Prabhupada, he explained it like that, and that's what Prahlad is saying. Now, in the beginning of Prabhupada's lecture, Prabhupada said that the whole Vedic civilization, the whole culture, the whole ancient Indian culture, the whole Vedic culture is an attempt to create a peaceful condition of the mind so that I can fix up my mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. So what was the purpose of the Vedic civilization? Raise your hand. A peacefulness of the mind. The whole civilization was to give us peacefulness of mind. And that peacefulness of mind was not an end in and of itself, but its purpose was that one could focus his consciousness, heart consciousness, on the lotus feet of Krishna, on getting out of the material world, on bhakti, on using one's life properly. Now contrast that with today's civilization, and Prabhupada would always say so-called civilization, its purpose is to agitate the mind and disturb the mind, continuously trying to put more and more desires into our consciousness so that everyone will consume and consume and consume and spend more and more money and become less satisfied and less peaceful. And indeed, that is the result. People become less peaceful, less happy, less satisfied. But the Vedic civilization, it had a very clear purpose, a spiritual purpose. And the lower parts of the civilization, not lower in the sense of not important, but lower... What's that sound? There's a... It's what? The wheels in the kitchen? What's a whiz? A wizard? Grinder. Huh? A blender or a blinder. So, the whole civilization, and if we understand the Vedic civilization, it was very, very strict and structured, so that no one was on the mental platform about what they should be doing. So the idea was the civilization's purpose was to bring the senses under control. And speaking, then Prabhupada in the lecture, he spoke about controlling the tongue in bhakti. That's what a lot of his lecture was about. Controlling the tongue in bhakti. And then, towards the end, he will conclude the lecture, and that's... Now this is the 5-minute segment that we're going to discuss. We'll hear the whole 5 minutes, and we'll discuss this in the next 4 classes, but we'll hear the whole thing right now, Krishna willing. Somewhere it should say amidst the, is that the introduction? Oh, number one. Oh yeah, we got that. Now turn off the lights and make it big. And make it a little louder.
Krishna personality. It's
supposed to be introduction. One should say introduction. Does one say one of those? Huh? Yeah, well, we'll see this part again. But look at Prabhupada's eyes and see, what does he see? Okay, hit the space bar. That was fine. Yes, 5 minutes.
Krishna personally says, Patram Puspam Phalam Toyam Jomi Bhaktya Prajacchati. So you have to prepare foodstuff for Krishna from Patram Puspam Phalam Toyam. Nothing else. Although he can eat, Krishna can eat fire also or anything. All the power. But Krishna prescribes for us that you can give me this in bhakti, with devotion and faith, then you will be benefited. If Krishna eats from your hand, then your life is successful. If Krishna accepts any bit of service from you, then your life is successful. Immediately you become liberated. Because bhakti is not for the conditioned soul. As soon as Krishna therefore adds this word, Krishna is not hungry for eating anything from your hand. He's not hungry. But he wants to teach you how to become a bhakta. Madhavakta. Manmana bhava madhavakta. He wants you to become his devotee. Then your life's problem is solved. So therefore he is prepared to take anything, little, patram puspam phalam toyam. So that you can begin to give something to Krishna. Krishna is neither hungry nor wants anything from you. For your benefit, for our benefit, Krishna is prepared to take a little leaf, little flower, little water, which is available anywhere, all over the world, without any price. Even if I am very poor man, I can pick up a flower, a little leaf, patram and little fruit and water is available everywhere. Everything is available. Krishna does not particularly say that you give me such fruit, such flower. Any fruit, any flower he is prepared to take, accept, provided you are a bhakta. Otherwise, even if you prepare very nice palatable dishes, he will not accept a single of them. It is a bhakti. Krishna is very much anxious to see that you have become a bhakta. Then your problem is solved. Because you are sons of Krishna, Aham-abhijapajapita, he is suffering more in one sense, because you are suffering. Just like your son is on the bed suffering from some disease, the father and mother feels more pain than the son. The father and mother is affectionate. So Krishna is so affectionate. Therefore he comes. Jada jada ithanma saglani bhavati var. When he forgets Krishna, then he comes to convince us that this is not good. You are trying to satisfy your senses. It will never end. Simply, you will be complicated from one body to another for satisfying senses. Sometimes eating stool, also that is also satisfaction of the senses. So this business will never make you happy. Better just surrender unto me, and what I say, you do. Just begin your service, surrender. Give me something, eatable. Patram pusmam phalam toyam, jomi bhaktya prajacchati. This is the beginning. The deity worship is the beginning of devotional service. Therefore, archan, the deity worship is very essential. Everyone should try. The system is, anyone comes to the temple, he brings something, patram pushpam phalam toyam, just to offer to the deity. That is the beginning. That is the beginning of love. Dadati, give something. Dadati pratikinnati. Bhungte bhojate seya. This is the beginning of love. If I love you, I must give you something. And whatever you will give me, I shall accept it. Dadati pratikinnati. So give something to Krishna and take his instruction. Dadati pratikinnati. This is the beginning of love. Therefore the deity is there, the instruction is here. If people take advantage, automatically he becomes a devotee, a lover of Krishna. That is the success of life. Thank you very much.
That is the subject of our presentation. Prabhupada's words of just 5 minutes, they are so powerful actually. One can spend a life discussing them. So now we'll hear, we'll just move on to the first class and we'll see that introductory part again. And we'll hear the first section, and we'll speak about it part by part.
Krishna personally says, patram puspam phalam toyam jomi bhaktya prajacchati. So you have to prepare foodstuff for Krishna from patram puspam phalam toyam. Nothing else. Although he can eat, Krishna can eat fire also or anything, all devour. But Krishna prescribes for us that you can give me this in bhakti, with devotion and faith, then you will be benefited. If Krishna eats from your hand, then your life is successful. If Krishna accepts any bit of service from you, then your life is successful. Immediately you become liberated. Because bhakti is not for the conditioned soul. As soon as Krishna therefore adds this word, Krishna is not hungry for eating anything from your hand. Isn't it? But he wants to teach you how to become a bhakta. Madhavakta, manmanah bhava madhavakta. He wants you to become his devotee. Then your life's problem is solved. So therefore he is prepared to take anything, little, patram puspam phalam toyam, so that you can begin to give something to Krishna.
Okay. I hit the space bar, let's see. Okay, then the first, so here's the first part over here. Krishna personally says, patram pushpam, pushpam phalam toyam, yome bhakta prayachati, from Bhagavad Gita 9:26. So you have to prepare foodstuff for Krishna from patram pushpam phalam toyam, nothing else. So the injunction is to perform bhakti. And this verse from the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita defines bhakti, because the word bhakti is mentioned several times in the verse. And Krishna says, if you give me even one leaf, it's in the singular, one flower or some water, but with bhakti, with devotion, I will accept it. Asnami paratatmana. The essence of what Krishna wants to say is that you make offerings to me, but let them be with devotion. Now the first question is, why is Krishna demanding? Why is Krishna demanding that we offer him things and with devotion? So the answer, of course, is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he is the Supreme Lord. And it is natural for every soul to make offerings to the Supreme Lord. This is who we constitutionally, by nature, by our very nature, we are servants of Krishna, and turning our back on Krishna, trying to act as if we were masters, we end up being servants anyway. Because it's natural, and because we are constitutionally servants, there's nothing we can do about it. A hammer acts as a hammer. A saw acts as a saw. A blender acts as a blender, and a grinder acts as a grinder. And we are servants. And in fact, in the material world, we are trying to act as masters, as the enjoyers, as placing ourselves in the center. And we just, in this way, cause ourselves so much misery. So as we're mentioning, the way out of this miserable situation is through bhakti, to re-engage ourselves in our natural position. So who is Krishna? He is the Parameshwara. He is the Supreme Lord. Well, how do we know? How do we know? There are so many religions in this world. There are so many religions in this world. And then there are atheists. There are atheists who say there is no God. What is the strongest argument they have for there being no God? Aditya? No, I won't ask you, because you don't. What's the strongest argument they have? Yes. We haven't seen him. We haven't seen him as a proof. Oh, that's not a very strong argument, if that's the strongest argument they have. What's one answer to that one? We haven't seen him. So therefore, we haven't seen him, therefore he doesn't exist. That's basically it, right? I mean, not that you're saying this. Would anyone like to argue with that point? I mean, everything that we haven't seen doesn't exist, basically. Yes. Wait, no, this particular point. Okay, go ahead.
The laws and the lawmaker. So by the fact that the laws of the universe are there, there has to be a lawmaker.
That implies that there should be a lawmaker, if and they're being enforced so strictly. The trees all go towards the sun. One tree doesn't decide, I'm going that way instead. I mean, it's not like the traffic in Bombay. Something about... One devotee told me that he was driving, he was in Vrindavan, talking about Bombay traffic. This devotee was driving from Vrindavan to Mathura, and he put on his right indicator and stopped, and he was making a turn. And a car smashed right into him from behind. So they got out, and of course, the system in India is you accuse the other person very strongly. So he said, "You, it's all your fault. You stopped, and you stopped." And then the person said, "But I indicated. I indicated. I was turning right." He said, "Baba, you think this is Delhi or something? That we suppose you indicate and we listen?" But they also have the very interesting way of dealing. One time I saw it when I was driving in a car to from Mathura to Vrindavan to Delhi, and then one car just came out and hit us, and it was clearly his fault. So instead of arguing that it was the other person's fault, my driver's fault, he just went like this: "I'm sorry, please forgive me." And then I was in the car, and then he apologized to me: "Please forgive me." And then no one could do anything, and he just left. It's a different system. So the law is enforced in this universe. The law is enforced. So to make laws is one thing, and to enforce them completely and universally is another. Now, what's another good argument? We haven't seen him, obviously. That's therefore he doesn't exist. That's obviously not a strong argument, because we haven't seen our... Has anyone seen their great-great-great-great-grandmother? But we all know we had one, even though we haven't seen him. But what on the other side? Now, these arguments, you cannot prove that God does not exist. It's not... Unless you go to every place, unless you've experienced everything in existence, you cannot say authoritatively that God doesn't exist. But that doesn't prove that he does exist either. So where do we get our strongest proof that not only God exists, but it's Krishna? Krishna is the Supreme Lord. I mean, ask yourself this question: why do you accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Who will answer? Wait, not everyone. Why do you accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? But really, an honest answer, not theoretical, but why? Okay, give a theoretical answer. Well, that's very strong. But ask the question: why do you accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Who said that? Yes, it's experience. We won't ask you what your experiences are, but yes, experience is very, very powerful. But because different people can say, "Well, I experienced something just the opposite," the ultimate authority is Shastra and Sadhu. You get great devotees, such as Srila Rupa Goswami, such as Srila Prabhupada, from other religions, great, great, great souls, they'll give up anything, anything, to experience their relationship with Krishna. They give up anything, but they're not miserable thinking, oh, I gave up something of value, and what have I gained? But it's just the opposite. They would not take back materialism, their material life, because their experience is so rich, so powerful. Our examples, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, they were so powerful. Prime Minister, Sanatana Goswami was the Prime Minister in the government of Nawab Hussain Shah. Historical people, so powerful. Raghunath Das Goswami, so wealthy. His father and uncle, millionaires, billionaires, gave it up, tuchava, insignificant, to taste something still higher, so wonderful, meaning their relationship with Krishna. And one, I've heard Prabhupada also in speaking about the deity, because in the Abrahamic cultures, Christianity, Islam, and the Jewish religion, they don't worship deities, or at least by and large, they don't worship deities. So they think this is idolatry, this is worshiping just imagination. We will speak about this in the last of the classes. And Prabhupada responded to this by saying there are millions of people in India who stand before the deities and open their hearts and get reciprocation from the deities. Do you think they are all just fools? Do you think they're imagining it? Every one of them is imagining it? And that only you are right? Such arrogance, actually. Such incredible arrogance. But it does come down to Shastra and the lives of the sadhus, and it also at some point must manifest in our own experiences of having taken a step to Krishna and having experience Krishna's reciprocation with our small step. That yes, yes, I have gotten one step closer to Krishna, and Krishna is actually there. And He has reciprocated with my one small step in a more wonderful way. Those experiences are the wealth of our life. And they come by Krishna's mercy. There is nothing we can do by our own part to evoke Krishna's mercy in that way. But Krishna, out of His kindness, when we take our insignificant steps towards Him, He reciprocates, and those reciprocations are powerful. Also, Krishna is so kind that He makes Himself easily available in the form of Radha-Balava, in the form of Sri Sri Gaura-Nitai. Krishna is so kind, He comes to us in the form of the holy name, His holy name. And we chant Krishna's names in the association of devotees. And there's an experience, a reciprocation from Krishna, a taste of what it's like to be with Krishna, to be close to Him, to have a relationship with Him. There's a taste and a direct experience, pratyaksha anusuyave. It's directly experienced. Chant Krishna's names. chant the holy names of Krishna and watch your consciousness become so elevated, at least during the time when we chant. This is the mercy of Krishna, Krishna Chaitanya. He's pointed this out to us. Chant Krishna's names. How often? Kirtaniya Sadahari. And experience Krishna. Experience enough that you want that taste. You want that taste. You want that taste to increase. And you want all the other tastes that we have to become minimized. Here is Prabhupada's when, because Westerners, especially, and there's one lecture that's one of my favorite. I've mentioned it before, but or when I started chanting, it's not that, you know, in I was 1967, 68 in Buffalo, New York. I tell the devotees I went to the University of Buffalo, and they're wondering what I was learning. But anyway, I did go to the University of Buffalo, and some of the things I learned I wish I could forget. But but we never heard of Krishna. Never heard the name of Krishna. Never saw a picture of Krishna. Growing up, it was so alien and far from our culture. So Prabhupada, he very boldly wanted to distribute the Krishna book. There's one lecture that I've mentioned where Prabhupada, probably in 1968, is speaking to some people, and he says, and you can hear this, he says, "Do you, you'll never see a picture of Krishna as an old man." And then he asked the audience, "Have you?" Meaning, have you ever seen a picture of Krishna as an old man? And then the audience is like this. And then his next statement is, "Have any of you ever seen a picture of Krishna?" No one. And then Prabhupada took the Krishna book and he wanted these books distributed to everyone. And there on the cover is a picture of Radha and Krishna. And it says Krishna. Anyway, what I need right now, this is the one that doesn't have its own sound. I need the sound. So I need the, so we can play it, but I need the plug on this side. And I'm going to do something a little peculiar here for the sound. And we're going to need to, okay, why don't we put on that one? Oh, we're going to have to get out of this. Can we, yes, it should be able to multitask on it, because we're going to have, otherwise we have to go back. Did you knock us out of that one? Okay. Why don't you go to the, is there one that says, who's going to be the first one who finds it amidst all the icons? There's one that says something about, I can't see from here, something about, it's an EXE file. What is that, CVP? No. It should say, who is Krishna? Something about Krishna. What does that one say? No. Unfortunately, I can't see from here. Who's going to be the first one to find it?
Not that one. Okay. Intro? No, no. Short? No. Preface? Yes, shortcut to preface. There it is. This is preface to the Krishna book. Okay, this is a big picture. Now, how are we going to do this? Okay, we have all kinds of whizzes here. Now, this is the book that Prabhupada
Nope, this isn't going to work. Okay, that's, anyway, we get the idea. Okay, no, I'm going to have to do it by microphone because I can't find it at this moment. Now, sorry for doing this, but I couldn't resist. I've brought one of my friends, he's sort of an impersonalist, but we're going to do this electronically. We're going to see if he's going to read the preface. Go to the next one. Okay, here's what now you have to use the pointer. Yes, thank you.
Preface in the Western countries, when someone sees the cover of a book like Krishna, he immediately asks, who is Krishna? Who is the girl with Krishna? Etc. The immediate answer is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How is that? Because he conforms in exact detail to descriptions of the Supreme Being, the Godhead. In other words, Krishna is the Godhead because he is all attractive. Outside the principle of all attraction, there is no meaning to the word Godhead. How is it one can be all attractive? First of all, if one is very wealthy, if he has great riches, he becomes attractive to the people in general. Similarly, if someone is very powerful, he also becomes attractive, and if someone is very famous, he also becomes attractive, and if someone is very beautiful or wise or unattached to all kinds of possessions, he also becomes attractive. So from practical experience we can observe that one is attractive due to 1. Wealth, 2. Power, 3. Fame, 4. Beauty, 5. Wisdom, and 6. Renunciation. One who is in possession of all six of these opulences at the same time, who possesses them to an unlimited degree, is understood to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These opulences of the Godhead are delineated by Parasara Muni, a great Vedic authority. We have seen many rich persons, many powerful persons, many famous persons, many beautiful persons, many learned and scholarly persons, and persons in the renounced order of life unattached to material possessions. But we have never seen any one person who is unlimitedly and simultaneously wealthy, powerful, famous, beautiful, wise and unattached, like Krishna, in the history of humanity. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a historical person who appeared on this earth 5,000 years ago. He stayed on this earth for 125 years and played exactly like a human being, but his activities were unparalleled. From the very moment of his appearance J to the moment of his disappearance, every one of his activities is unparalleled in the history of the world, and therefore anyone who knows what we mean by Godhead will accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one is equal to the Godhead, and no one is greater than him. That is the import of the familiar saying, God is great.
God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is how Prabhupada explained Krishna, who Krishna was, and what do we mean by Krishna to people who had no idea of who Krishna was. And the Krishna book, and Prabhupada published that in 1970, that was one of the first books he put out, was to explain specifically that it is Krishna, that there is a God, and the God is a person, and that person is unlimitedly powerful, and his name is Krishna. Okay, now we have to go back to that other one, but there's a slider at the bottom of that, so I think you'll be able to get it back without too much difficulty. We don't have to go through the opening part. So, who is Krishna, and why is he's asking that we offer him patram pushvam? Is that the first part? No? Okay. The first part ends, then you'll be benefited. No. The first part ends, we'll be benefited. So I think we've passed. That's the second part. No, I'm sorry. That's there's the first part, and then there's four different parts after that. So after Prabhupada speaks that first part, then we've divided that first part into four sections. Yes. Okay. In any case, so keep going. It's after Prabhupada's voice is over, then we need that first part back again. So there's Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Perhaps we can open up a door or a window, or both. And then there's the process of attaining him that Prabhupada is speaking about. And that, of course, is bhakti, or giving something to Krishna. I'm not sure. What we need is, we need it where it says, then you'll be benefited. You can give me this with bhakti, with devotion and faith, and then you'll be benefited. Keep going. No, now we're at the end, right? No, we passed it. After Prabhupada's words, after he's spoken, there was a section we were just on. Give something to Krishna. Okay. That's the end. Now go back to the beginning of the words. Problem is solved. You'll be benefited is the thing we want. No. Okay, let it run. Just put it on with the sound. Just let it go. Is there sound? This doesn't have sound. Okay. Now then, bhakti is not for the condition. So now bring it back one more, or two more. Panels, yeah. Keep going. For some reason it's not there. But okay. Yes. Okay, then hit it one more time.
Krishna personally says, Patram Puspam Phalam Toyam Jomi Bhaktya Pradyacchati.
Turn off the sound. Just hit it. Well, it won't go yet. Okay. Just let it run. But without the sound, and it eventually will come to where we want it. Okay? Just let it run without sound. And huh? It sounded like there was sound. Just put it on play. Technology gives us a mixed blessing, doesn't it? It gives you a fruit and a slap at the same time. Okay, so in any case, Krishna Krishna asks us, Krishna asks us to give him just the fruit of flower, but why? Why does he ask us this? What does he want by making this request? Now, obviously, if he's the all-powerful, or Krishna being the all-powerful Supreme Lord, has no need of leaves or flowers or water, if he's the absolute truth, everything is his already. So what is his purpose in asking us to give him a leaf of fruit or flower or some water? It has to do not with his need, but rather his compassion. That he wants something from us, and it's not leaves and flowers or water, but he wants us to come closer to him. And the methodology of coming closer is bhakti. So when someone makes an offering to Krishna, what attracts Krishna to this offering is bhakti. And what is in our interest is to turn from our, selfish, self-absorbedness and turn towards Krishna and understand who we are in relationship to him. That we are his servants. And this is our constitutional position. But not the kind of servant that everyone abhors in this world. I have to do some service for someone. I wish I was free. I wish I didn't have to do that. That is not bhakti. That is not in relationship with Krishna. But rather, what Krishna wants from us is not just service, but devotional service. The natural expression of affection that exists between the soul and Krishna. It's completely natural. Devotional service is completely natural. And turning our back on Krishna, we end up serving so many other people. So, to turn our back on our relationship with Krishna is the product of false ego. And false ego is the very essence. Ahankar is the essence of the creation of the material existence that's described in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. And what we are meant to do, and what Krishna is offering us, a simple way to begin our getting out of the material world, to begin our turning to him, is just offer me something. Even a leaf, even a flower, even a little water. Just offer it to me, the Supreme Lord, who possesses everything, but just offer it with some devotion. And asnami paratatmana. So, Krishna's interest. Okay, if we can give Krishna this in bhakti, with devotion and faith, we'll be benefited. Why don't you just hit the button again? And then Prabhupada said, if Krishna eats from your hand, then your life is successful. If somehow or another, Krishna will accept our offering, then our life is successful, because immediately you've done something free from the three modes of material nature which bind tightly every living being. We think proudly that I am doing this and I am doing that and I am doing this, but actually we are being whipped and controlled by the modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And the activity that is free from the modes is one that is liberated. It is an activity wherein one does something just for the pleasure of Krishna. So that is the meaning of Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam. Now Prabhupada said that bhakti, here he says that bhakti is for the liberated, the free soul. That means who is not under the control of the modes of material nature. Because Krishna is fully spiritual. And he is not satisfied with anything of this world, anything from the material realm. But what he wants from us, and we'll speak about this point later, not that he needs in one sense, but what he wants from us is that the relationship is established again, very, very deeply. He wants this, and therefore to help us, his request is just offer me with love and devotion one leaf, one flower, some water, and I will accept it. Make this an offering of your heart. So the essence of the offering is in what Krishna wants, and that is the devotion. So there are so many wonderful pastimes of Krishna that illustrate this from Krishna's activities, his leelas, when in Vrindavan and in Mathura and Dwarka. And there is one that I thought of from the 11th chapter of the 10th canto. Krishna had been after after Krishna had killed Trinavarta, which was in the 7th chapter of the 10th canto, and then after that in the 8th chapter, a lot goes on. Then the 9th chapter, the binding of Krishna, and the 10th chapter, Nalakuvera and Manigriva. But then in the 11th chapter, which is a very important chapter of the 10th canto, because in that chapter, Krishna leaves Vrindavan with all the leaves Gokul, Mahavan, right across from Mathura, and all the Brijbasis go to Vrindavan to set up their residence there. But right before that happens, directly before that happens, there's description of how Krishna was charming all his relatives. Because after all, he's all beautiful. And he's unlimitedly powerful. And he's unlimitedly effulgent. And his effulgence is like effulgent blue sapphires. And everything he does is done with such charmingness. So, even though he's all-powerful, the residents of Vrindavan, because of the nature of their love, they can completely control him. So, one day, when Krishna was just this big, much younger than you, how old are you? Still. Krishna was much younger, maybe 2 years old, and he was dressed, as we say, like village boys in the four directions only. His clothing was the wind only, and he had a little black string around his waist for his protection, and the ladies in the Vrindavan village, they told Krishna that if you dance, Krishna, if you dance for us, we'll give you a sweet. And I don't know if you've ever seen these little children dancing like that. They train them. Has anyone seen that? It's so cute. They dance, and they would clap their hands, and Krishna would dance for them. Sing Krishna, and Krishna would sing. And then they would say to Krishna, "Oh, Krishna, why don't you, because he's just a little boy, why don't you bring your father's shoes from over there, his wooden slippers from over there?" And Krishna would take those wooden slippers and walk towards the ladies with them on his head. And then, "Bring that book, Krishna." They were completely controlling the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Krishna's heart is very soft. It is as soft as melted butter, it is said. And he was completely acting like a child because they loved him as a child. So one by one, bring the shoes, bring the book, and they would ask him to bring each time things that were a little heavier because they wanted to see how much Krishna could carry. And then it came to some wooden piece of wood they asked him to bring, and he couldn't carry it. So he just touched it, and then he showed he was very, very strong. And all the people in Vrindavan, the ladies, everyone, their hearts would simply melt by his activities. And then one day, outside, because these were the people who were close to him in the village, but then someone not from the village, a lady selling fruits came. And you know this story. I'm going to read a little of it from the words of Kavi Kanapur. Kavi Kanapur was very special because when he was young, you know what he did? What did he do? He sucked the toe of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And who was his father? Even understand. So what happens when you suck the toe as a little baby of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? You are sucking nectar. So what came out of Kavi Kanapur's mouth was nectar. And what came out of his pen was nectar. So one day, as Srila Sukadeva Goswami describes, while Krishna, just as a little boy, he was outside and this fruit seller came from a neighboring village. And she said, "If anyone wants any fruit, please come, please come. Get them for me. If anyone wants any fruit, please come, please come." So Krishna saw that she had come. And she was a devotee, because everyone in Vrindavan was a devotee. And Krishna wanted to show, because his pastimes have many meanings and they are on many levels. So the highest level is not exactly the philosophical meaning level. The highest level is to just watch the lila, the exchange of the pastimes between Krishna and his devotees. But yet there are philosophical points as well. And what Krishna wanted to show philosophically by doing this was that he was ready to give love to anyone. The nature of the exchange that one gives when one gives a patram puspam palam. One gives something to Krishna and what one gets back is of the greatest value. We give Krishna something of this world. We give something to Krishna of this world, which is available anywhere and everywhere. And Krishna takes it and gives back something of the greatest value, of the greatest wealth, which is ultimately himself, prema bhakti. So, this fruit seller was calling out, and suddenly this little blue boy, not blue like of this world, but this bluish boy who had a transcendental, effulgent complexion like a fresh monsoon cloud that was effulgent with the sun or lightning behind it. And he started walking out of the house towards her. And he had seen his mother barter or trade things with these sellers, because there weren't coins and notes and plastic bills and things like that, or credit cards. He didn't walk over with a credit card and swipe it or something like that. No, it was very, very innocent and simple. So Krishna, in his hands, took some grains. And there he was, just completely attractive and beautiful, walking towards the fruit seller, and in his hands were these grains. And because his hands were very small, and he was just a little boy, the grains started falling from his hands. So when he got to the fruit seller, there was practically nothing in his hands. And as she saw him coming, she saw this beautiful boy. She saw his sweet, attractive effulgence. She heard the sound of his golden ankle bells tinkling as he walked towards her. And in the words of Kavikarnapura, I wanted to just read one sentence here. He said, she absorbed her eyes, which meant her full consciousness became absorbed in this vision of this boy walking towards her. She absorbed her eyes in the full experience of seeing Krishna, the personified stream of bliss. Think of what that means. Bliss personified. That's one way to understand Krishna. He's the form of bliss, of ecstasy. Not happiness, but ecstasy. Nothing of this world. Krishna's form is Satchidananda. This is what it means. It's solidified, personified, bliss, knowledge, and eternal existence. Effulgent, unlimitedly sweet. So she saw this boy who was the personified stream of bliss. A stream is always moving. And similarly, this boy, in the most charming way, with his ankle bells tinkling, was moving towards her. And she fully experienced him in this way. In other words, she had bhakti, because Kamsa saw Krishna. And he didn't experience Krishna. Raso Vaisa, when Krishna entered the wrestling arena, some people saw him as the best of the Yadus, Yadu Uttama. Others saw him, the wrestlers saw him as a thunderbolt. And the ladies saw him as the most attractive male. And Kamsa saw him as death. So what happens when you see death? Make it terror. Terror enters the heart. So when Kamsa saw Krishna, he was terrified. But when others saw him, they experienced the greatest happiness. So she, the fruit seller, experienced Krishna like a stream of bliss flowing towards him. And he was more enchanting than a beautiful rain cloud. Effulgent, darkest complexion. So she became completely absorbed in the bliss of Krishna's association. And she was a pious person, a lover of Krishna. So she took fruit. Her basket was full. How did she carry it? On her head, of course. And she just filled Krishna's hands And Krishna had such little hands. And by his Aishwarya Shakti, by his potencies, he was able to hold, he couldn't hold the grains, but he was able to hold all the fruit that she was given to him. Because all his Shaktis are always trying to serve him. They always try to serve Krishna's pleasure. And he gives them the power to act independently. So he doesn't have to call on his Aishwarya Shakti. Now it is the time, my dear Aishwarya Shakti, to make my arms big enough to hold all the fruit. No. His Shaktis act independently to serve his Leela. And who does the Leela serve? The devotee. Exactly. So actually the ruler in Braj is not Krishna, and it is not even Krishna's Leela Shakti, but the ruler in Braj is the devotees, especially we can say Srimati Radharani. But the ruler, Prema, rules Braja, and Krishna, they clap, the ladies clap, and he dances. They ask him to sing, he sings. So, she just wanted to, she was so charmed by Krishna that she gave him all her fruit. And Krishna was so charmed by her devotion that he turned all her fruit into jewels. Fruit exchanged for jewels. But it's not because there's such a tendency with the conditioned soul to think, oh well, this is better than the stock market. You know, all you do is you put in your money on this level and it goes up to this level. You give fruit and you get jewels. So therefore, yes, devotional service is the way to go. It's the best investment. And in one sense, it's really true. But Krishna wasn't reciprocating exactly with her fruit but that she was offering to him. He was reciprocating with the simple, affectionate desire that she had after being charmed by him, by experiencing the stream of beauty that was Krishna, enchanting, being enchanted by him, who is more beautiful than a rain cloud, effulgent rain cloud. And she just simply, because what did Prabhupada say when we heard that preface? He said that Krishna possesses everything that attracts us. Someone in this world may be beautiful, but no one in this world possesses all beauty. That's like if you take, there's a beautiful person. So that person, if you could say, could you contribute your beauty? Put it here. And we get all the beautiful people in the world to contribute their beauty. And Krishna is like the sum total times 1,000,000,000,000,000, because he's the reservoir of beauty. He has unlimited beauty. An unlimited wealth, an unlimited power and strength. So he's all attractive, an unlimited knowledge and renunciation. And what other one? Fame. So when she was confronted by the stream of ecstatic beauty, charm coming towards him, she spontaneously, lovingly gave him the fruit, not as a business deal, but just out of her natural affection. And Krishna reciprocated by turning all her fruit into jewels. So the jewel is the prema, and he gave her prema bhakti also. The jewel is prema. And if we can capture somehow or another, by the mercy of Krishna, the jewel of prema, then the fruit, whatever fruit of work we have or whatever. Oh, hello, Hare Krishna. It's a honeybee. No, leave them alone. They have their own way. They come in, they go out. So bhakti is really on that level. That's natural, spontaneous, spiritual affection. The soul's natural consciousness to Krishna. Go to the next again. So as soon as, therefore, Krishna adds this word. What word? As soon as you offer something with bhakti. Krishna says the word bhakti 2 times. Krishna's not hungry. He's not hungry for eating from your hand, from eating anything from your hand. He doesn't need anything. Again, he's all powerful. But yet he's asking for a leaf, a fruit, or flower, some water. But he's not hungry, but he wants to teach you, me, us, how to become bhaktas. He'll take a leaf, even though he doesn't need a leaf. He'll take a flower, even though he doesn't need a flower. He'll take a water, some water, even though he doesn't need water, just to teach us how to become devotees. Madbhakta, to become Krishna's devotees. Manmana bhava madbhakta. Now what is manmana bhava madbhakta? Bhava madbhakta means become my devotee. But what does manmana mean? I couldn't hear one voice in the midst of everyone's answer. Yes, put your mind on me. So there's such a tendency to make our offerings without our mind. Because if you do the same thing day after day after day, the externals become mechanical and you can do it easily. You master the ritual of it. But what Krishna wants is the mind filled with devotion and the activity being coated by that devotion, and then Krishna has a taste for the leaf, the fruit, the flower, or anything else that we offer. His taste, again, is in the bhakti. He wants you to become his devotee. Now, how does that sound? How do you react when you hear that? He wants you to become his devotee. Raise your hand. Tell me, how do you feel when you hear that? He wants you. You, Prabhu, yes. And you, and if I miss... Oh, yes, okay. You too. Adrian, yes. Yes, yes. How do you feel? What do you... Yes. Personal what? Why does he want me to become a devotee, maybe? Or why? He's got so many devotees. He's got millions and billions of devotees. Why does he want me to become a devotee? Huh? It's just natural, because this is who we are. This is who we are. We each have our relationship with Krishna. And if we turn our back on that, trying to enjoy, trying to solve all our problems. So much of our life is spent trying to solve problems. But this is the real problem. This is the real problem. Bhakti nahi hai. And if we can solve this problem, then our life's problem. Because if Krishna accepts, if we can somehow or another if somehow or another we can make an offering to Krishna and he accepts it, he's caught us forever. And our life's problem is solved. In other words, our life is successful. Krishna has written our name, so to speak, in his book. Next. Therefore, he's prepared because he wants us to become a devotee. Please do this. Even I'll take a leaf of flower, anything. I want you to become my devotee. Anything, little, insignificant, so that you can begin to give something to Krishna. And this is spiritual life. Giving something to Krishna. Putting him in the center. This is spiritual life. So the fruit seller did this and became wealthy with prema bhakti, wealthy with jewels, however way you want to look at it. She became wealthy. It's the bhakti that's the essence. Prabhupada also said, give us this. Krishna asked, give me this, patram pushpam. But he's all devouring. Do you remember when he said that? Was that in this part? He can even eat fire. But we shouldn't offer, we do offer Krishna fire like this, but not at the same time, not in the way for him to eat it. But yes, he can eat fire. In the Bhagavatam, in the 17th chapter, and also in the 19th chapter of the 10th canto, there's descriptions of Krishna eating fire. You know these stories, these pastimes, that after Krishna danced upon the heads of Kaliya, then Krishna walked out of the water. And what the people on the shore, the Brijvasis, they were in complete anxiety up to this time. Why? Because before that, for one muhurta, 48 minutes, Krishna had been enwrapped in the coils of the snake. Now, we read the Krishna book or the Bhagavatam and we hear, oh, what a nice story. And we already know that Krishna is going to free himself because we know he's all powerful, and maybe we read ahead anyway. But when Sukadeva Goswami was going to tell this pastime, he didn't even want to tell this to Maharaj Prickett, because it would have been painful. Even though it has a happy ending, that Kali is chastised and sent away, there is a time period where Krishna appears to be in difficulty. And for that reason, because Maharaj Prickett's heart was so soft and so much full of devotion, it would cause him pain to hear of Krishna in difficulty. But Maharaj Prickett asked him about it. And one can ask the question, well, why did Krishna allow himself to be held by Kaliya for so long if it's going to cause the devotees difficulty? So Sanatana Goswami gives an amazing answer to that. He says that, first of all, we understand that no one can touch Krishna unless they are exceptional souls. So Sanatana Goswami said, while Kaliya was embracing Krishna, Krishna thought it's impolite when someone's embracing you to burst out of that embrace. Very impolite. So, okay, he's embracing me. But then later, when the residents of Vrindavan came and Mother Yasoda was just barely alive, she fainted before she got to the water. She couldn't tolerate seeing Krishna, the difficult position. If she would have died, all the residents of Vrindavan, they were like trees cut off from the roots when they saw Krishna in that condition. What happens when you cut a tree from the root? It just falls down. That's what Krishna is in trouble. It's going through the brain, and then I think this is not good. It might be dangerous for him. No. They practically died. Their life left their bodies. And the only way the Mother Yasoda remained alive was that the ladies poured in her ear the nectar of Krishna Katha. Your boy is so wonderful. He did this, he did that, he did this, he did that. And remember, he did this. Remember what happened when the trees fell down? And thereby, Mother Yasoda stayed alive. So, Krishna seeing the anxiety of the residents of Vrindavan, because he's a person, and he reciprocates. He's not impersonal. An imperson cannot reciprocate. A person can reciprocate. A person does reciprocate. So Krishna reciprocated with the anxiety by freeing himself, and then he danced upon the heads of Kaliya, and then after Kaliya became a devotee, he surrendered, and then presented Krishna with so many gifts, jewels and gold and cloth. And when it came time for Krishna to come out of the water, the residents of Vrindavan, they were just barely alive. And they saw Krishna sort of just kicking his legs and sort of walking on the water. But what was happening, our acharyas explained, that Kaliya, being a devotee, sent snakes along the way to place their head under Krishna's feet, because he was so fortunate that his head was touched by the lotus feet of Krishna. And snakes by nature are not willing to share their fortune with others. They're envious. But now he was a devotee, and that enviousness went away, which tells us something about the nature of a devotee, is that he wants to share whatever Krishna has given him with others. Whatever realizations, especially, Krishna has given, he wants to share with others. Well, what happens if I tell people my realizations? Of course, it has to be an appropriate audience, speaking on the appropriate level. Then what? Then I won't have any realizations left, or whatever. No. Our realizations grow as we share them. So wonderful in Krishna consciousness. The more different from material wealth, the more we distribute the wealth of our Krishna consciousness, the more it grows. Give. Give it. It will expand. Your realizations will expand. Consider whether that you'd like to realize more and understand more and deeply experience Krishna consciousness. Well, then give it. It will come more that way by the mercy of Krishna. So anyway, the snakes on the order of Kaliya, previously envious and now knowing what it's like to be danced on by the kicking heads of feet of Krishna, experiencing the ecstasy. We can't imagine what it's like to be touched by the body of Krishna, by personified ecstasy. But yet, it's obviously quite an experience. So Kaliya wanted others to have that. So what the residents of Vrindavan saw was just Krishna kicking his feet and walking on the water. But what was happening was the snakes' heads were being stepped upon. And then Krishna got to the shore, and he was covered with scents and jewels and cloth that were given to him by Kaliya and the Nagapatnis. And immediately all the cowherd boys, they ran to Krishna and embraced him because they loved him so much and he was doing wonderful things all the time. They just embraced him. They didn't think even, oh, Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj are here. We should wait for them to greet their son. No. It was just completely spontaneous and natural. They ran to Krishna and just hugged him. And then finally Mother Yasoda got Krishna alone. And she took him and put him on her lap. And she just was looking at him again and again to make sure there were no injuries or anything like that. Because this is Mother Yasoda's unparalleled love. And then Nanda Maharaj said, because it was late already and everyone was exhausted, so Nanda Maharaj said, why don't we spend the night here? And all the Vrijbasis were so happy to hear this. Why? Why? They could all be with Krishna. They could look at him for the whole night and talk about him with him being right there. This is what they always all wanted. So they made 5 different circles of devotees around Krishna to protect him. They didn't stay right near the Yamuna, but they didn't go too far away from the Yamuna. They didn't stay really too near because they were afraid that Kaliya might come back and seek revenge. But they didn't want to stay too far away because in case he did come back, they would drive him out. This is the way we were thinking. We'll pick up sticks and drive him away. Because they didn't want Krishna to have to undergo that again. So they didn't milk any of the cows, even though Krishna was thirsty. Or they milked the cows, but they didn't give the milk to Krishna because they were afraid that the land was poisonous from Kaliya being there and that Krishna might take something that wasn't appropriate for him. So they were spending the night, and in the middle of the night, either by Kamsa's messengers, because Kamsa always was spying on Vrindavan, because he knew, he was getting an idea that it was Krishna was the one who was going to kill him. So his spies told him that Krishna had driven away Kaliya, and he was in anxiety. So he told them, his messengers, to light a fire and burn them all up. So they lit a forest fire. And the residents of Vrindavan, what did they do? It was blazing. It was surrounding them. First they thought it was Kaliya that had come back burning with anger and envy and rage. But then they saw it was a forest fire. What did the residents of Vrindavan do? What did they do? They ran to Krishna. So there is so much for us to learn from these pastimes. Yes, Krishna can eat fire. The devotees don't offer fire to Krishna, but Krishna can indeed devour fire. And this is what Nanda Maharaj said. Because we have to learn, take our steps to Krishna. And we have to learn that even if we are surrounded by a forest fire, and the last thing that our crazy mind wants to do is to turn to Krishna. Because the crazy mind won't want to turn to Krishna unless we are very, very well practiced. But this is what the residents of Vrindavan did. Nanda Maharaj said, Krishna, Krishna, O Lord of all opulence, O Ram, because Balaram also, he knew that Krishna wasn't going to be hurt by Kaliya. So they knew how powerful Balaram was. O Rama, possessor of unlimited power. O Krishna, possessor of all opulence. O Lord Ram, who has unlimited power. This most terrible fire is about to devour us, your devotees. Would we be able to say that to Krishna? It begins with Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam. Krishna, your devotee was surrounded by fire. Oh Lord, this is Nanda Maharaj speaking, because they had heard from Gauga Muni, Gauga Charja, Anena Savadogani, Yavan, Yasyap, Tirishita, that you just take shelter of Krishna, there'll be so many dangers. When we first take the spiritual life, we think, oh, everything's going to be just gulabjamins and what else? And sweet rice, until as we get older we can't digest either of them. But we think it's all going to be all sweet. But if we learn this art, the art of taking shelter of Krishna, who is all powerful, then we will be always okay. So that Nanda Maharaj continued, O Lord, we are your true friends and devotees. Please protect us from this insurmountable fire of death. We can never give up your lotus feet, which drive away all fear. This is the devotion exhibited by the residents of Vrindavan. So Krishna wants us. He's prepared to even take a leaf and a flower so we move forward in our devotion to him. Now Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur described the inner meaning of their words. O Lord, if we die in this fire, we will be separated from you. And that is unbearable for us. Therefore, please save us so we can keep serving you. At the heart of their consciousness is not the slightest tinge of selfishness. In the heart of their hearts is only Krishna and Krishna's service. And therefore, because Krishna is everything for them, therefore, they are everything for Krishna. Krishna, sadavo ridayam mayam, sadavam ridayam tvaham. Because only, Lord Narayan says, because only my devotees are in my heart. And only in my devotee's heart is me. Therefore, I don't know anything. Sadhu Beer, something, I didn't know this is. Yes, Sadhu, no, the next one, the one a little after. But because Manakapi, I don't have Natweva, I don't have the slightest thing in my heart other than my devotees. This is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the All-Powerful. He has an Icha Shakti, a Sarvasankalpa Shakti. Whatever he wants happens. And what does he want? And what is in his heart? It's his devotees, and he doesn't think about anything but them. This is Krishna, who we're being asked to surrender to and give ourselves to. This is his nature. It's essential that we understand and experience the depth of Krishna's nature and what he's really like. Because when you first meet someone, hello, how are you, and everyone's smiling and everyone's practically speaking really nice the first time you meet them, and then you see someone and you say, I just met this person, he's so nice, and then they say, you don't know what he's really like. Just see, the microphone fell from the sky with that one. But this is what Krishna is really like. Sukadeva Goswami is telling what he's really like. Oh, Krishna is so nice. And with the same words, he says, you don't know what he's really like. You don't know how nice he actually is. He's the personified stream of bliss that has nothing in his heart but his devotees. You should find out what he's really like. You should get closer to him and know him deeply. See how he reciprocates with you. You give him a fruit and he gives you a jewel. So the Vrijvasis are really like that. There is nothing in their heart. They are the ultimate. They are our exemplars in bhakti. They don't know anything but Krishna. In happiness, in distress, in whatever, they only know Krishna, 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 Krishna. And it's completely spontaneous. So for us, it is not spontaneous. So Krishna makes it easy to move on the path, and then we follow the instructions, the vidhis, on this marg, and gradually it becomes spontaneous. Gradually his love develops. But that's, I'm still going to keep you more, even though I've already kept you too long, and everyone's fast asleep, almost, not quite, but because there's something else I wanted to tell you. Another time that Krishna ate fire. Because he ate fire then, at the end of the Kaliya pastime. And then, right after that, the coward boys are playing a Bandiravan, and Kamsa, by this time, after Kaliya is chastised, oh, talking about being in a bad mood. He was just like sitting like this, like completely depressed. And one of his best friends came in, whose name, Palambasura, which gives a hint of what kind of friends Kamsa had. He came in and said, what's wrong? He said, you don't know what's wrong. Everything is wrong. Palambasura said, what happened? What's going on? He said, Krishna killed everyone. And he, Palambasura says, give me 1 hour. I'll bring Krishna to you, Balaram. Kamsa didn't even pick his head up. He said, moths like to run towards fire. What to do? He was starting to... he could understand that Krishna was all powerful. He still couldn't surrender. Why? For the same reason that I can't surrender. We look at Kamsa, boy, what a demon. Well, why don't I give myself fully in spite of hearing, experiencing, talking to devotees? It's sad, actually. So we need special mercy from Mahaprabhu and from Srila Prabhupada. But anyway, so he said, if you want to go ahead. So Palambasura, he went to the village of Vrindavan first. And he went into one of the houses and he took the clothes of a cowherd boy and disguised himself like a cowherd boy. And then he went into the midst of the cowherd boys who were playing in Bandiravan. Raise your hand if you've been to Bandiravan. Yes. Whose hand is there? Yes. Yes. Very good. When were you there, Prabhu? What did you see? Did you see Bandiravat? There's a tree there. Yes. This happened right there. So he immediately started. He was around the edges of the circle of cowherd boys, and Krishna saw him. And his idea was, I'll just play, and Krishna will get to trust me, and then I'll take Krishna and Balaram and throw them over my shoulders and bring them to Kamsa. So Krishna thought, oh, here's a demon here. First I'll make him trust me that I think he's a coward boy. But then he thought, oh, I've killed so many demons and Balaram hasn't had so much fun yet. So he said, he gave this one to Balaram. So he saw this one, it was Palambara, and said, oh, my dear friend, I've been missing you. Where have you been? I want you to always stay close to me. There's an old mafia expression. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. That way you can watch them. So anyway, Krishna arranged, they were playing like kings. Krishna and Balaram were kings, and the coward boys were ministers and army men, and there were different kingdoms, and some of the boys were with Balaram, and some of the boys were with Krishna, and they were fighting with each other, and sometimes they would make peace, and sometimes they'd be enemies, and sometimes they'd plot against someone else. They were playing. And then Krishna said, with Pulambasura with him, he said, I have an idea. Why don't we play in teams and we'll fight you, and whoever loses has to carry the winner on his shoulders. So Krishna played with Sridham. They had a duel. And Pulambasura, Krishna arranged, inspired him to play with Balaram. And Krishna's team, Krishna was so humble, his team lost. And of course the boys were saying, no, we won. No, we won. And finally, after arguing for a while, because boys tend to be a little like that, not Aditya, but others. Sparsh, are you like that? No. You maybe when you were little, but not anymore. You're not a kid. So Krishna arranged it that his team lost. So he carried Sridham on his shoulders, and Balaram was carried by Pulambasura. Now Balaram. So the idea was, they would carry the boys, the winners, and you know, you have them on your shoulders, and they have a chance to get up. No, you know, so it's not fun being the loser like that. So Pulambasura was carrying Balaram because his team lost, but Balaram was very heavy like a mountain. So he assumed his real form, which is horrible and huge. And it describes how his teeth were upward. He was a real asura. But Balaram, because we have to understand the nature of bhakti, is that when Krishna and Balaram are playing, the love of the devotees, like one time I went to the Sistine Chapel. You've been to Bandiravan, but you've never been to the Sistine Chapel in Rome, I bet. But it's very, very interesting in there because it's religion, but their concept of God is very different from especially the Gaudiya Vaishnava conception, because it's always I think I explained this one time, my realization when I went there. You go there and have these incredible paintings and carpets. Have you been there? No. On the walls and everything. It's statues, and it's very reverential with God. So it's very typically, there's a great effulgence in one corner of the painting, and you see some devotee on the far corner like this with fear of God. But in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, it's just the opposite. In the corner is Mother Yasoda with a stick, and God is like this. So who can understand? How is it possible that God can be like afraid of anything? But this is, it's the inconceivable potency of who's actually ruling Braja. It's Prema rules. And what happens is the love of the residents of Vrindavan is so powerful and so overwhelming that Krishna becomes like a little boy. The all-powerful, unlimited Supreme Lord adopts the mentality and behavior of a little boy. So amongst the cowherd boys and the friends of Krishna, where Pulambasura and Krishna was, Balaram was so completely absorbed in playing with his friends. Their love for him was so great. This is how powerful bhakti is. That Balaram, when the demon Pulambasura assumed his actual form that was huge like a mountain with the teeth going upward, Balaram, in the mood of a little boy, forgot that he was the all-powerful Supreme Lord. So he became frightened. And the different acharyas explain it in different ways, but some say that Krishna told Balaram, just by the movement of his eyes, he just moved his eyebrows in such a way, or some say that he actually said it, Balaram, this isn't the time to forget that you're the Supreme All-Powerful Lord. And then Balaram, oh, yes. Because he was playing. And then he just went, whoomp! Over. He was being kept, because the demon understood, he finally understood, Pulambasura understood that Krishna was so powerful that he was effulgent like a thousand suns. So he wanted to keep away from him. So he was just going to take Balaram away. So the game was that you would stop at the Bandira tree, big, beautiful, huge tree, but he kept on going. And then he assumed that form. And then he got smashed by Balaram and he fell to the ground. And then Balaram from far away just started walking back. And all the cowherd boys, having seen what had happened, how Balaram, the boy had turned into a big asura and Balaram had smashed him. And then Balaram had killed him. And Balaram was walking back and all the boys were so happy because Balaram was so wonderful. And again, he had done something so wonderful. What a friend. What a friend. How would you like to have a friend like Balaram? So they all just went to Jai, Jai Rama, Jai Balaram. They just embraced him and hugged him. Balaram, yeah. Oh. But the pastime wasn't over at that time. So what happened then is that they noticed, this is in the Bandiravat, they noticed that the cows, while they were playing in this way, the cows had wandered away. And the boys became so much in anxiety. And because it's hard for us, perhaps, especially for us grown up in the West, maybe if you've grown up in a village in India or something and took care of cows, but the cowherd boys, just they loved the cows. The whole cowherd community, it's not that it wasn't cattle raising or cowherding business. They loved the cows, and because they loved the cows gave so much milk, would so much nourish them. And they thought, oh no, our cows. cows, they're all gone. They've wandered away. Where have they gone? So they couldn't see them anywhere, and they followed the trail of the eaten grass and the cow prints. And Krishna went on top of a hill, and he took his pitambara, uttariya, his yellow cloth, which is effulgent and most beautiful, and he waved it all around to capture the attention of the cows. Oh, and then he called them, started calling them by name. Oh, Davali! Oh, Pingali! Anyone know any of the other names of cows? Oh, Madangamukhi! Oh! But there's a whole list of names. He would call them all, just what it would be like for Krishna to call your name like that. Oh, calling you, missing you, wanting you to come back. So the coward boys went looking for the cows, and the cows were in complete anxiety being surrounded by a forest fire again, another fire, because it was the summer season and things are very, very dry. So they were in complete anxiety, and when they heard Krishna calling for them, their anxiety was removed, because they only loved Krishna too. They were greatest devotees. So the boys got there. And then they saw suddenly that forest fire, probably also started by Kamsa's men or friends of Palambasura, they suddenly were surrounded by a forest fire. Now, this is terrifying. There was a horrible forest fire experience in Victoria. Was it last year? Yeah. And did anyone ever talk to someone who was will anyone have any direct experience of that? Did anyone talk to someone who was... Yeah.
One of my best friends lost his house. His wife left through panic early in the morning, and he stayed there. And it just came over the hill that quickly that he didn't even have a chance to turn the television off. He just hopped in the car and he couldn't even grab his wallet. And so he was quite lucky in St. Andrews to...
Well, what did you talk to him and say, what was it like being... that close to a forest fire? Or do you know any experiences like that? Or could you describe it? No. But it... terror. Terror, out of control. Heat. Crackling, burning, sounds. Terror. Yeah. Because everything like that, it's gone. It's there. Then the illusion is cracked. We think this is reality, and then some devastation comes by. Like that, in an hour, it's all gone. All our sense of reality. And what to speak of to be stuck in that while the fire is burning. So when the coward boys and the cows were surrounded by this forest fire, the cowherd boy said to Krishna, "Oh Krishna, Krishna, most powerful one, oh Rama, you whose prowess never fails, please save your devotees who are about to be burned by the forest fire and have come to take shelter of you. Krishna, certainly your own friends shouldn't be destroyed. O knower of the nature of all things, we have accepted you as our Lord, and we are souls surrendered unto you. And when they took shelter of Krishna in this way, Krishna said, just close your eyes and do not be afraid. And the boys thought, now that isn't going to help. I'm in danger, and he's saying, close my eyes. We criticize that, don't we? Like the rabbit or the ostrich, when he's in danger, he puts his head in the sand. When Krishna says, close your eyes, and I've heard explanations of why he said that, but there's many explanations. But then the boys thought, well, we already know that Krishna is so powerful. He must know some mantras and tantras and some gems or something. And everyone knows that when you're reciting mantra for the purpose of tantra, you have to be alone. So because Krishna can't save us with his mantra and his tantra, if he's surrounded by us, he wants to be alone. So the easiest way for him to be alone is if we all close our eyes. So the boy said, oh yeah, that must be why Krishna is saying that. So they all closed their eyes. And then Krishna, the Bhagavatam says, opened his mouth and he swallowed the terrible fire. He just went, that's how the Bhagavatam describes it. And it was gone. And then they opened their eyes and they were sitting under the cool shade of the Bandiravat. And they thought, wait a second. We were just in the fire. We asked Krishna to save us. He told us to close his eyes, our eyes. And then we open our eyes, and it's all gone. It's all gone. So some of our acharyas say that Krishna was thirsty. Now, the last thing you want to eat when you're thirsty is fire. And also, Krishna previously got in trouble for eating dirt with Mother Yasoda when his friends told on him. So he didn't want to get in trouble. Now he's eating fire, so he said, close your eyes. But some of the acharyas say that Krishna's shaktis working independently transform that fire into a drop of nectar, because Krishna was thirsty, and then in his hand, and then he went. And when the boys opened their eyes, they were in the cooling shade of Bandiravat. And they thought, how has Krishna done this? This an ordinary boy can't do. Narayano Samogunai. Gaugacharya said that he had qualities like Narayan. He must not be an ordinary boy. He must not even be a tantric. To do this, he must be a devata, a demigod. And because we're playing with him, well, then we must be demigods also. How nice. Because their love for him was just so powerful. This is Vrindavan. It's full of wonderful, wonderful pastimes. And then after that, thinking that they were demigods with Krishna, they became overwhelmed with ecstasy. And then they went home, chanting the glories of Krishna. So we can begin. Give something to Krishna. This is Prabhupada in his compassion, knowing Krishna, knowing the soul's relationship with Krishna, knowing Vrindavan, and seeing everyone just suffering in illusion in the material world, which is also Davanala. What does Davanala mean? Forest fire. and just trying to enjoy in the midst of a forest fire. So like your friend who was in the got close to the forest fire, when it was time to go, couldn't take anything with him, not even his wallet. Was so fast. So death is such a metaphor in that. I mean, not that we want to philosophize the suffering of others, but this material world is a heavy place. It's a forest fire. There's no guarantee. You could be in a train station and suddenly your number comes up and you can't even say goodbye to your family members, beloved. Time. It's heavy. It's not. And we continuously are in illusion. Illusion. You could be light. You might feel tired. And you lie down because you're feeling weak and tired. It might be over. So, not that we want to fill everyone with, you know, with nightmares, but what we want to do is remind everyone that this material world is a forest fire. And to take shelter of illusion that, oh, everything's going to be all right, is taking shelter of illusion. And we don't recommend people take shelter of illusion, because if there's a struggle between illusion and reality, reality always wins. And the example, if anyone isn't convinced about that, I recommend that when everyone leaves the room, you think with all your power that that wall doesn't exist. And then start here and run as fast as you can through that wall. And then you'll understand what I mean. But don't do it when the other devotees are around. Just wait till later, because they'll laugh at you or try to stop you, more likely. What would you say to a person who's trying to do that? You'd say, you're crazy. So that's how Prabhupada saw us. It's crazy. Under the influence of Maya, we act crazy. We fight with reality. And we lose every time. And the illusory attempt to get things right is called the struggle for existence. And it ends in failure. It must end in failure. And we all know it, and yet we struggle. So, Prabhupada, out of his compassion, knowing where we belong, knowing where true shelter is speaking to us so that we begin our bhakti and then develop it. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. You are very tolerant. Tolerant of a person who spoke too long, and tolerant of our technology, which sometimes worked and sometimes didn't work as well as it worked at other times. Any questions or comments? We have about 30 seconds worth of questions and comments. If anyone has either? Yes. That was the Cowherd Boys, too. Yes, but it doesn't, the Brijbasis are very hard to understand. We could say that the consciousness of the Brijbasis is impossible for us to understand. There is no contradiction in them. They could be completely aware of Krishna's opulence, and it doesn't lessen their love for him, their madhurya. The sweetness of their love is so great that nothing can lessen it. But as opposed to even the most exalted Vasudeva and Devaki, who, when they are aware of Krishna's opulence, they don't know what to do. They can't treat him as a son. But the exact words of Nanda Maharaj were, Krishna, Krishna, O Lord of all opulence, O Rama, possessor of unlimited power, this most terrible fire is about to devour us. But because their consciousness, the purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura reveals their consciousness. If we, O Lord, if we die in this fire, we will be separated from your lotus feet. And this is unbearable for us. Their love is the engine that drives everything they do. And their love, in Dandamaraj's case, is in Shudavatsalya Prema. Therefore, please save us so that we can keep serving you. So although it appears externally to be one thing, it never lessens, it never increases in one sense. It's like an ocean that never gets smaller when it's evaporated and never gets larger when the rivers go into it. It's full. There's movement in the ocean, but it's fixed. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Prahlad prayers ki jai, Sri Vrindavan dham ki jai, Sri Radhavallabha ki jai, Sri Sri Gonitai ki jai, Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi ki jai.